The trial of Anders Breivik, an anti-Muslim fanatic who carried out bomb and gun attacks in Norway last year that left 77 people dead, has just started in Oslo. The terror attacks that traumatised this small nation have dominated political life and the media in Norway ever since. Nina Berglund, a journalist who's attending the trial, joins me on the line from Oslo. Good morning, Nina.
Good morning.
In case people are not familiar with exactly the extent of this atrocity, perhaps you'd remind us of what he did.
Well, on the Friday afternoon of July 22nd, Anders Breivik set off a bomb in downtown Oslo, in the heart of town, where he was attacking the Norwegian government, caused massive destruction, killed 8 persons. He was unsatisfied with how many people were actually killed, so then he continued with Plan B, which was to drive to the island of Utøya, which is the summer camp for the Labour Party's youth organization. And there he, parading as a policeman, gunned down 69 persons, mostly youngsters, teenagers, and young adults, and also wounded and maimed hundreds more and left others scarred for life.
Now, we've heard the death toll. I mentioned at the beginning 77 people dead. What do we know of those who were very badly injured? I mean, how are they today? I'm sure there are some whose recovery will not be complete.
No. Most are considered scarred for life in many ways, at least psychologically, but they are also trying to get on with their lives. The last person to be released from hospital came out maybe a few weeks ago, badly maimed, but he is moving on and still wanting to be active with the Labour Party. And there's been a resiliency and reflecting the solidarity that really swept through Norway immediately following the attacks. So I think the trial itself is a bit of a catharsis in a way. It's part of the national healing process. The Prime Minister was on the radio this morning speaking about exactly that this is just something that the nation needs to go through. The trial will last for 10 weeks.
The witnesses that will be called, the prosecution more than 90 witnesses, but the defence calling up 40 witnesses. Do we have any idea as to what those defence witnesses will be offering?
Mostly the strategy from the defense attorney, who I had an interview with about a week ago, is to focus on Breivik's ideology. It's very important to Breivik and to his defense counsel that he be declared sane, not insane. And so they are basing the motivation for the attacks on his political ideology, where he feels that he was fighting a war against multiculturalism, which he blamed the government and the Labour Party for allowing in Norway, that he's trying to be preventing Muslim immigration in Norway. And so they are, a lot of the witnesses that are being called are also on both sides of the political spectrum, far right, far left, with strong ideologies from Islamic activists to right-wing extremists.
The interesting juxtaposition, I suppose, of the claims by the psychiatric teams for defence and prosecution is that the prosecution want him to be declared insane and the defence want him to be declared sane, which is the opposite of what you might expect.
That's exactly right. It's one of many paradoxes in the entire case. But the prosecution lately has been tempering its standpoint. They went along with an original report from court-appointed psychiatrists who declared Breivik insane in January. There was such public outrage over that declaration that the court, in an unprecedented and historic move, decided to seek the proverbial second opinion. That report came out last Monday, actually, declaring Breivik to be sane. So it is ultimately up to the court to make the determination at the end of the trial, and that is the key question that the trial seeks to answer. There's no question of Breivik's guilt. He has admitted carrying out the attacks. He is defending himself against the attacks as a punishable act because he feels this was part of his of a necessary war. But the insanity or sanity declaration will now ultimately be made by the judge and, of course, determine what sort of sentence
So give me the options then. If at the end, we know he committed these terrible acts, so that's a given. Mm. Suppose at the end of the day, the judge said, this guy is clearly insane. Mm-hmm. What will follow? And on the other hand, if he says he's insane, what will follow? I mean, what are the punitive options for the judge?
The punitive options in Norway, which has a relatively liberal court system, some might think it's extremely lenient. If he is declared sane, he then will be sentenced to prison. The maximum term in Norwegian court system is 21 years. However, there is a provision that he can be sentenced to what's called 21 years in prison with forvarding, which is a form of protective custody that could effectively keep him in prison for the rest of his life. If he is declared insane, then he will be committed to a psychiatric institution, and under Norwegian court practice, his mental health will be reevaluated every 3 years. Opening the fact, and this was the cause for the public debate in January, that if he goes into psychiatric care after 3 years or every 3 years, he could be declared healthy and released.
I can see the dilemma. I can see the dilemma, though, because he is saying, and the witnesses that are calling for the defense are saying, yes, I did this and I deserve to be punished for this because I was breaking the law. But I was sane in my decision to do this, and the reason I'm doing this is because I object to multiculturalism and so on. Mm-hmm. It's arguable that if that is a sane, although obnoxious, position to take, that after 3 years they could say to him, yes, you are sane. We don't like the way you think, and we know you'll be a danger to the public, but you're certainly sane. Off you go.
It's possible, but that actually is unlikely because Breivik himself, on repeated occasions, and it's emerging more and more from court documents, records of his conversations with court-appointed psychiatrists, with his own defense counsel, with prison officials, et cetera, he has expressed absolutely no regret for what he has done. He said that if anything, he wished he had gone farther, and he would not hesitate to do this again. So he has been branded as extremely dangerous, and it's unlikely that if he is committed to psychiatric care and ultimately is declared sane, that there may be moves. This is speculation, and this is untested legal waters in Norway, but this is such a sensational and spectacular case that if he was declared insane and later declared sane, that he then would be put into some other form of prison custody because he's considered a danger to the public.
I mean, someone who does something like this and who expresses no remorse seems to have all the traits of a psychopath.
I'm certainly not a doctor, and no one else is, but there's probably a lot who share that opinion. But he has, in court today, it was very, very interesting. He's using a lot of symbolism, and it was interesting how calm he remained. He and his symbolic displays of utter disregard for the court system. He immediately objected to the court's legitimacy, much like a war criminal might do at The Hague. And he, little things like he refused to stand up when the judges left or entered the courtroom, et cetera, et cetera. He's very opposed to the entire system and has utter disregard for authority and the state and the government.
Now, normally in a trial of this nature in our jurisdiction, except where they invoke a special law which was brought about for terrorist offences, and we had a thing called the Special Criminal Court, which had no jury. Normally, for something like this, there would be a jury. What's the situation in Norway?
In the Norwegian, right now this is in the city court system. This is at the first level of the court system here in Norway. And it's normally one judge and two what they call lay judges, which are rather like jury members, but they have presumably the same authority. They come with their ruling or their verdict at the end, and in consultation with the professional judge, they decide on a verdict. In this case, they have what they've called for starket rett, which is they have strengthened the court. So there are two full-time judges, two lay judges and also what they call VARA, or assistant judges, that will step in if anybody gets sick or is incapacitated during the 10 weeks.
So they listen to everything that's going on. Yeah, but these reserves, they listen to everything, so they're completely up to speed on the case in case they are needed to step in.
Yes.
Is there representation in the Norwegian system for the victims?
Oh, yes. But the Norwegian law is extremely clear that the case against Breivik now and any other criminal case is never viewed as an uproar or a resolution between the actual victim and the alleged criminal. It is between society and the criminal. So all of the victims, all of their families, all the survivors, many of whom are plaintiffs as being subjects of attempted murder, they are kind of bystanders in a way. They are represented by state-appointed attorneys, but it is the state that is filing these charges on behalf of the dead and the wounded and what have you. But Anders Behring Breivik versus victim A and victim B and victim C. It is the state taking this, seeking justice on their behalf.
But at least they have a representative presence in the courtroom.
Yes, they do. Yeah. Most all of them do. Many of them they share the lawyers. There may be 20 victims or families, survivors that have the same lawyer. But there are about, I think the number that came out today in the final analysis was 151 what they call bistandsadvokat, that are contributing your support lawyers for the plaintiff, for those who were directly offended by what he did.
Finally, I should ask you about security, because when you look at someone like this man and the kind of hatred that there must be for him in Norway generally, and I'm thinking of Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby, and I presume that the security around this man is absolutely intense.
Oh, absolutely. He's been given three cells in the prison where he's being kept. He's completely isolated from all other prisoners at the prison. This morning, when he was brought to the courthouse, it was in a multi-car convoy led by, with the blue lights flying and the motorcycles at both ends. He came into the courtroom through underground passages in handcuffs. He was uncuffed before the proceedings began. He immediately made a Nazi salute to the courtroom, and then when they took a break, they put the handcuffs back on him. There's also massive security around the courthouse itself, and it's the equivalent of going through the airport. Everybody is searched, long lines. People had to start lining up at 7 o'clock this morning for the trial that began at 9 o'clock.
Nina Berglund in Oslo, thank you very much for reporting on the opening day of this case in Oslo.